You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Curtain Up Theater people, welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, Your Program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater and smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. Today's show is the continuation of a new series called Act Two Places. I'm bringing on a series of guests to discuss how COVID-19 affected them and their organizations. As you all know, we've been hit hard with a complete, hopefully temporary, change of lifestyle and business systems during this pandemic, and theater wasn't spared. In fact, theater has undergone one of its biggest shifts, if not the biggest shift, in modern history of theater. This series gives theater folks an opportunity to discuss the effects of this shift on them and their organizations. My guest on today's show is Larry Little of CPA Theatricals, located in Chicago, Illinois. Fans of the podcast may recognize him from an earlier show as my guest on episode 21, which highlighted the New York Musical Festival run of his incredible show, Numbers Nerds, now known as the 57th Annual Mathlete Summit, the almost all-girl math musical. I also interviewed his music team for the show, composer David Kornfeld and lyricist Alex Higgenhauser. They're on episode 20. CPA Theatricals has a unique, highly sensical way of creating and developing musicals, and I'm super excited to have Larry back to enlighten us on how CPA Theatricals is handling the COVID-19 crisis and their plans for reemergence. Now, Larry was interviewed at a different time to accommodate schedules, so you may hear differences in audio here and there. Not that that takes away from the interview. I'm just letting you know up front, just in case things sound a little different from what you're hearing right now. So, without further ado, I give you Larry Little from CPA Theatricals. Hi, Larry, and welcome back to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hey, how are ya?
Doing great. Doing great on this gray day here in New York City. How are things in Chicago?
It's gray and it's 40 degrees. Not good.
Yikes. It's like, that's like sweater weather, scarf weather, Uggs weather, if you wear Uggs.
Yeah, my husband. It's raining a little bit, so it's just unpleasant all around. Glad to be inside today.
Right. Indeed. Now, you've been on the show before, and I'm so excited that you come back. I love CPA Theatricals. I love your business model. So for the new listeners, please give us a brief history of CPA Theatricals and how you create and develop theater. And tell us what makes your creating and developing style so unique.
Great. CPA Theatricals is a nonprofit organization. I started it in 2003. We'd only produced a couple shows at that point, and in 2015 is when we started producing full-time. And what we focus on is creating and developing new musicals for underserved populations. And what I learned pretty quickly was that people kept saying to me, we need more shows, more musicals featuring strong young women. So all of our shows feature majority women in strong roles. And what we have found, a little niche in that schools, universities, middle and high schools, community theaters have really been very receptive to the products that we have created. We also, I have a different kind of approach to creating shows. I've seen many, many new musicals, as I'm sure you have, and many people in your audience. with all the festivals and all that. I create the story. I create the characters. Then my company commissions a writing team to create the musical. It is my job then to develop that musical through readings, through workshops, through rewrites, and eventually full production. But here's also a way that we're unique. And that is, I start my story and characters come from somebody telling me or me learning of a need. So let me give you an example. After my show that went to New York, 57th National Mathlete.
Which I love.
Thank you. We've had a lot of success with that. It's now being licensed by Theatrical Rights Worldwide, and we're very grateful about that.
Well deserved.
Yeah, thank you. Somebody came to us and came to me and said, you know what? I really wish you'd do a Christmas show. There are really no great Christmas shows with a bunch of roles, leading roles for young women. And I thought about that and I did a little research and I went, my God, I couldn't find any. So I created The Land of Forgotten Toys, a Christmas musical. And that has four strong leading women roles. And that took quite a while to do, but it started from a need. It started from somebody saying to me, I wish there was this out there. I think as we're going to get later on, we're going to talk about the Zoom musical that we created. But that's a way in which we are really unique in that I hear or learn about a need and I create a show to meet that need.
Excellent. Now, I know that CPA, or I feel like CPA, those letters have a double meaning for your company.
You're smart.
Did I get that? Did I read into that well? Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, CPA Theatrical stands for Creative Productions and Theatricals. But the truth is, I'm a CPA. And my accounting firm was named the ACT Group. Before I was an accountant, I was a performer. I was a director and a producer. And when I formed my nonprofit, I thought, actually, a friend of mine in New York gave me this idea. Let's just do the opposite. Instead of ACT, let's do CPA. So that's where it is. That's where it comes from. I'm no longer practicing as a CPA. I produce full-time right now, but I still am a CPA, and I had a previous career as a CPA.
Did you do that on purpose?
Do what?
Did you name CPA Theatricals, CPA Theatricals, because those are the initials that are part of the name, but because you're also a CPA.
Absolutely, that's why I did it.
Just so like smart.
just like when I started my CPA firm, I named it ACT because I was an actor, and I wanted that to be as part of that. You know, my previous career, I was a CPA, and I went into that kicking and screaming. You know, when I left show business in my late 20s, early 30s, I went into a deep, deep depression.
Sure.
And I spent 2 weeks, you know, just crying and saying, but I left it. I left it all completely. But my goal was always to return to it at some point. At some point, after I made enough money, after I was at a point in my life, I was going to return to show business. But I always had a little bit of that theater background, the showbiz in me as I ran my CPA firm. I did a lot of tax returns for actors and theater companies and a lot of nonprofit audits for theater companies and other nonprofits in the arts. So I always kind of had my hand in it there.
Very cool. I just thought that was so clever. I think that's so clever. I really do.
Well, I'd love to take credit for that, but I didn't come up with it. A friend of mine in New York said, you know, why don't you name your company, blah, blah, blah. And I said, hey, what a great idea.
Hey, that's okay. I mean, you took it and you ran with it, and you know, kudos to you and your friend who came up with the idea. It's I always think that it's really, really important to have good names, titles and things like that. I mean, it's the intro to the business or the production or what the play, the musical, whatever it is. And I could totally relate to having to pull away from theater to do other things. I mean, I've had to do that before, and it's sad. Sometimes life gets in the way and you have to do it, but it never, ever, ever leaves.
Yeah, you're right. You know, mine was just a little peculiar in that I performed. I was a performer, actor, singer, dancer for a long time, and I did the show of my lifetime. And in the middle of our long run, I got stage fright.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Really?
In the middle of the show, actually 5 minutes before the show was about to go on, I got stage fright.
Knowing you, I just can't imagine you getting stage fright.
Yeah, that's what everybody says that. But you know what? It's terrifying. And sure. It was enough that I said to myself after that performance, I said, I'm never doing this again. And I never performed again.
I
transitioned into directing and producing, but that was it. And then the other impetus for me really giving everything up was I was doing some print work at the time, and I got a big fat print job, and it paid me a ton of money, and I bought a condo with it. And I thought, you know, this having money is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. So it was all those things that coupled that I said, I'm going to give up show business altogether.
Wow. Well, it's like I always say, you got to water the money tree. You really do. you have to.
Yeah, I mean, you do. And at that critical age of late 20s, early 30s, you know, you have to do something.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. That is sort of the point of view of the 20s and 30s individual. Well, speaking of theater never going away, we're in the middle of this COVID crisis, and theater has just been unfortunately so diminished. And I think that one of the things that we're seeing is the strength of theater and that people are doing theater differently for a while. A lot of these people are actually finding new ways to do theater that they're going to incorporate once we're all vaccinated and we get out of COVID or we have herd immunity or whatever it is. Tell us how the COVID crisis affected CPA Theatricals. What were those first few days like when we all had to shut down?
Yeah. So, you know, we all have stories like this. I was scheduled to go to New York March 17th. I had a week planned. I was meeting with the licensing company about handing over my next two shows. I had two Broadway producers who I was scheduled to meet with because they just saw my Christmas show. It was just kind of on and on and on and on. It was great. And of course, 4 days before, 5 days before, everything shut down.
Slam, yeah.
So I took, you know, the same month that everybody took and was depressed and in denial and got angry and all that stuff and stayed at home. And by the way, the weather in Chicago at that time was horrible. Horrible. You couldn't go outside. It was raining and snowing and you couldn't get any exercise and we had stay at home orders. It was just awful, awful. And then I got an email from a teacher who said to me, please, can you help us? We were scheduled to do Matilda. They canceled us the day before we opened. I have 34 students who have 2.5 more months of school left and they are depressed and angry. And can you please find some way to create a Zoom musical? And I wrote her back and I said, oh, thank you very much. I wish I could help you, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how to do that. I had every excuse in the world. And then about a week later, I was meeting via Zoom with one of my mentors. And I told him the story and he said to me, stop right there. You must say yes to every opportunity that comes along right now. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about how it works. Don't worry about how you're going to do it. You'll figure it out. But you must say yes.
Yeah.
And I took I took a day and I thought about this and I really just try to wrap my brain around this. And I talked to my husband, and the next day I wrote the woman. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I don't know how, but I'm going to do this. And in the next 5 weeks, I created a Zoom musical. And it came out of nowhere. And I did a series of interviews with a whole bunch of students, middle school, several versions of high schools, people from all over the country. And we created, and they gave me the ideas, and I created the characters for a show called The Mystery of Custodia. By the way, I started that conversation with asking the students, you know what, I'm going to do this. What should I create? You know, should it be a drama? Should it be a comedy? Should it be a mystery? Should it be a farce? Should it be a mockumentary? And almost unanimously, they said mystery. And then I said, well, you know, what's mysterious to you? And they pretty quickly said, well, we know we have school, we have home, and we have church. That's about all our lives, and sports. So I narrowed it down and kept asking questions. And finally, one teenager said to me, you know what I always found mysterious was that whole basement of the school, you know, custodia. And I said, wait a minute, what's custodia? She said, well, that's what we call where the janitors live, where they keep their stuff. And I said, can I steal that name? She said, of course. So that's how we came up with the title. I took a week to create the characters and write the story. I gathered my team together and I said, here's the deal. You have to give me 100%. If you cannot devote all of your time to this, say no. Because I'll find somebody who can. Everybody knows how to work at that point.
Right.
And so I quickly found my team. I told the book writer, you have 1 week to write the book. You don't have 8 days. You have 1 week based on my story. And then I told the composer, he has 1 week to write 13 songs. Well, that wasn't very easy. And because I have to approve everything, he said to me, okay, I'll do it. But you have to approve my songs within two hours. And I said, I'll do that. And I approved everything except the finale. And I said, I think you can do better. And he got a little angry with me. And then, of course, he wrote the best finale in the world. And we took a week to polish it. Meanwhile, I was trying to get some pilot productions. And I got three pilot productions right away. Three teachers said, I'll do it right away. I'll do it. I'll do it. So we did the pilot productions. And so in 7 weeks, everything was done.
Wow.
Yeah, it was beyond what I could have imagined. And the show's good. That's the funny part. The show's good. You know, there's a bunch of Zoom musicals out there. Some of them are not so good. But I wanted it to really be good. I wanted the music to be great. I wanted characters to be funny. I kept saying, we got to do a comedy because nobody wants to talk about this damn pandemic. You know,
right.
I mean, they all want to, but we really want to. One little girl said to me, you know, she was about eight, and she said, I'm just tired of this. Can we just not have a show about COVID? And I went, okay. And I really felt her pain, and I really heard what she was saying. Because, you know, a surprising amount of students wanted a show about this. You know, and I said, and then a teacher said to me, there's already a couple shows out there. You know, do something different. So I did. And so we created this. And on a lark, I kind of hit, the lottery. And I've given over 800 perusal copies away at this
point. Cool.
And we've had almost 40 productions, 40 licenses so far.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And that didn't really start till August, September. So many, many teachers and community theaters had already chosen their season. I have a theater in Texas who's a community theater, and they're doing this with adults. And they're doing it on the stage, but no audience.
Right.
And they're filming it that way. I am still shocked by how many, what the different precautions are across the country. I mean, I'm sure you're reading this stuff too. There are community theaters and schools doing full productions, with or without masks, I don't know, with a full audience. you know, I'm still in shock over that. We say to when we license the show, we say to them, please follow the guidelines of the CDC and your local health department. Don't put people's lives in danger. And there's an educational theater educational program that came out with a long list of precautions that schools should use. So did the American Association of Community Theaters and university theaters as well. So we just hope everybody's playing safe, but they're still doing theater, whether it's a Zoom musical, whether it's a socially distanced musical, or whether it's full musical. They're still doing theater. The professional world hasn't made that leap yet. Not in Chicago. There is nothing going on in Chicago. Nothing on a live stage. Nothing outside. So the transition was slow but fast. And kind of rode away.
Love that.
Here's one other thing, and that is when Mystery of Custodia took off, I had somebody say to me, I love your Christmas show. Can't you adapt this to be socially distanced? Oh, and I thought, oh my God, how do we do this? There's all these characters, there's dialogue, there's group numbers. And I talked to my dramaturg, who was also a university teacher and a director. And I said, put your director hat on and tell me, can we do this? And he said, well, I don't know. Let's try it. So in about 4 weeks, we then took our Christmas show, The Land of Forgotten Toys, and adapted it for virtual staging, meaning no touching, everybody's 6 feet apart. There's only one group number in the end. Everything else is a solo. It's all meant to be socially distanced, wearing masks. So that became available, an adaptation of our full-length Christmas show.
I was going to ask, have you set a goal with your teams to make shows like The Mystery of Custodia something that can be a fully staged production once we're through COVID and we can have audiences and actual plays that we had before?
Yes.
Can it be done that way?
Absolutely. Well, certainly Land of Forgotten Toys. It's already a full production. We just adapted it the other way around, so they could just do the full production. I have a school that has all levels from grade school all the way up to adults that has already booked The Mystery of Custodia as a full production.
Cool.
They're not going to do it yet. They can't do it yet, but they've paid the license fee. They're going to do it. And it never occurred to me that this could be done. And the director said, oh, yeah, I can very easily see this done on the stage. And so I thought, oh, hallelujah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's more opportunities to do the great work that you develop and create. And that's great. I've often said that it's when we're pushed and we feel like we're against the wall as artists that we start to come up with these ideas we would have never come up with before, because we get in a comfort zone.
Right. That's so true. You know, I never would have done this if that teacher hadn't reached out to me and said, why can't you do this? Mm-hmm. You know, and I would never have done this unless my mentor said to me, you must do this. And then how on earth do you create a musical? It's only 35 minutes long, but still has to have a beginning, a middle, and end. The second song is the I Want song. You have the 11 o'clock number. You've got the big reveal. You know, how do you do this in 5 weeks? You know, but at that point, just as you said, everything was, you know, nobody had jobs. Everybody had all this creative energy, and they'd all been, you know, in their house for 5 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because I was doing some projects, and part of it involved utilizing actors, and a lot of actors that I wanted to utilize, well, not a lot, but a few, they were busy. And then all of a sudden, you know, COVID comes and everyone got unbusy pretty fast. And so it's, I mean, beneficial for me, but, you know, there's still, you know, grasping for work and things like that. And I was glad to give them the work that they had. Aside from, first I have to say, Larry Little gets more done before 7 o'clock in the morning than most people get done all week.
Well, you're absolutely true. That is my creative time. I'm a morning person. I have friends in college who used to say to me, if the phone rings before 8 a.m., you know who it is. That was before the internet. Yes, I do. I'm a morning guy. You know, when I'm in production, I'm starting at 5:30 in the morning.
Wow.
But I'm in bed at 9 o'clock, so that's okay.
I am too, but I'm usually watching TV. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, the only thing I'm really looking at is the back of my eyelids.
So. It takes me a little while. I don't start at 5:30, but I'm up about 5:30, 6:30, yes.
Wow, that's great. Now, aside from the speed and the productivity, because that was definitely a must, have you adjusted any other of your systems or creation or developmental process while still staying true to your mission statement? Is there anything else that you wanted to add in above and beyond that example?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
One of the thing that we did do is we do musicals. This is what we do. We do musicals. But a teacher wrote me actually on Facebook and said, I have non-singers this year. You have no plays. And so we converted Mystery of Custodia to a play. And we had all these sound effects. We added sound effects. We added additional scenes. And did I ever think I'd be creating and developing plays? No. So we did kind of open that door, which was a very surprising thing. And we've had a bunch of licenses for that already.
Wow.
Our hope was we want to give schools, teachers, drama, coaches, community theaters, universities options. Because right now, that's what they don't have. They don't have it. As you all know, Zoom plays and musicals. Musicals are almost impossible on Zoom, and they're challenging, and, you know, they're awful to watch. And if they're longer than 35 minutes, you want to slit your wrists. You know, there's delays, and the green screens don't work so well. Anyway, on and on and on. So keep it short, keep it fast, keep it funny. I don't know. But right now is to stay... I keep saying to everybody around me, I have to stay flexible and I have to stay open.
Good. Good. I think being nimble is really, really helpful in this day and age because everything changes from one day to the next.
Oh, sure does.
And you never know. And it's like any other trauma that people are going through. We're all always grasping for theories and solutions and whys and how comes. And it's important that we just go, okay, today is today.
Yeah. Today is today. What's on the things? What's on my schedule to do? Make sure I fill it up with a few more things so that the week is full. Look to next week after that. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard for me. I don't know if that's hard for you, but I've got one of those minds that projects, 5 months ahead of time, even though I sleep a lot and I sleep in, I still do that too.
Yes. I have two big whiteboards in my office. You saw one earlier.
I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah, and the one that you cannot see are my goals, the new ideas for shows, my long-term strategy, and people I want to connect with this week.
Wow. Okay, so I see two whiteboards, which means you actually have three, because I can't see the third.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That was paper, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. If you'd be so kind as to indulge me, you were talking about how difficult it is to produce music and musical numbers on Zoom. I wrote a musical called Running, and recently we recorded during COVID five of the solos. There's five characters, and each one has their own solo. And I did a video of it. And it's if you go to my Facebook page or Running Musical, I actually did a video explaining how intricate that is. And because you talk about the delay, and we got our engineer in there, and he's talking about how to do it and putting it all together. It is really, really complicated, and takes like five people in five different locations.
It's crazy. And I knew nothing about this. So I had to do all this research. And then what we did is when they buy the license to our virtual shows, they get a production guide. And this production guide shows them how to do it. And then I hired a company to create YouTube videos. This is how you create a song. This is how you edit it. And he did these videos. And so they now have access to someone who shows them piece by piece by piece how to do it.
Oh, yeah.
This is how you want your students to record their song. I had to learn all that. And I had to hire people to create YouTube videos. But when teachers call and say, I don't know how to do this. I've never done this. I'm computer illiterate. I say, here's the production guide. It really is very simple. There is a really simple, easy way to do it. And by the way, a true Zoom musical, meaning there's no dialogue. It's all solos and monologues. That's what Mystery Custodia is. And that's what works best. There's no delay. There's no delay. It's just everybody has a solo or their monologue, and it just moves to the next. The easiest way to do that is put it on a YouTube playlist. And it just goes one after the next. There's really no delay. Yeah. If you have no editing skills and you have a crappy computer, put it on a YouTube playlist and it works fine.
Wow. A great advice. See, he probably had that figured out, folks, within, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours of having this idea.
If I know, Larry. I interview 1,000 people like you do. I steal everything. I keep saying, how do you do this? How much do you pay for that? Where did you get this person? Do you know anybody who helped with this?
Yeah.
I know everybody thinks I'm sure they say, that nosy guy, but I'm not afraid to ask those questions. How else do you learn?
Exactly.
And the truth is almost everybody helps you out.
Sure.
Very rarely will I get somebody to say, I'm uncomfortable telling you that.
Yeah. My experience is that if they're uncomfortable telling someone that, they usually don't know. And it's so hard for people to say, I don't really know. And, but if they get defensive or they're just being protective of their knowledge and, the world is just so much bigger now because of the internet that it's easy to find the answers from someone else or something else.
Yeah.
So let's all try to help each other during this. It's so important right now.
We are all in this together. It is so true. It is so true.
Indeed. Now let's give some love to your team for the Mystery of Custodia. Talk about them.
Oh, great. So I started with interviewing the students. And from there, I created about 6 characters. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, geez, I really need some help developing this story. So I brought in Nick Reinhardt and Frankie Leo Bennett. And through Zoom, several days a week, we fleshed out the story. I would say, I'm not sure that this works here. Nick, what do you think about this? And he would say, no, I think we need something like this. And then Frankie would jump in. How about if we draft up, 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 up? So together we kind of created, developed that story. They were incredible. And then we had the book writer and, the composer lyricist, is Dylan Marcarell, a New York guy, and Mike Ross wrote the book, and both of them are Dramatists Guild fellows this year. They just won the Big Fat Award. Congratulations!
That's great.
Yeah, and they're just incredible guys. And Mike is a late night worker, and we have it on Google Docs, so you see that he's putting things in at 4 in the morning. And Dylan is one of these guys who is a genius. He wrote the music and the lyrics for it. So big shout outs, love to all of them. And then we had to test it. So I asked a handful of actors. The show has 17 scenes. And if you have 34 kids, you can do a 34 kid Zoom. You can do split the roles, or you can do it with as little as 9. I think I have had a teacher do it with a little 9 when they double up roles.
Sure.
And I had I hired a handful of actors, and we sat in a huge room all wearing masks, and we read the show twice, 3 times after we changed it. And then we went right away into our pilot productions.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, big shout out to a class act in Champaign, Illinois, and Karen Pianchi in Gurnee, Illinois, for Viking Middle School, and Tina Reynolds for Ovation Performing Arts. Thank you for all those. And Don Terrio in Chicago for creating a Chicago production. It was great. It was very happy.
Wow. Just you're doing great. I mean, seriously, this is awesome.
I'm very blessed. I'm very, very blessed.
No, you're blessed, but you work hard for it, and you recruit great talent. And, you know, pat yourself on the back. I know people who are very driven. We don't pat ourselves on the back often enough. It's always, okay, I've accomplished that. What's next?
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I am one teeny cog in this. One of the things that I am really great at is getting a whole bunch of people in the room and directing a project. I'm good at saying, why didn't that work? What did you think about that character? When she did this, what was your feeling about that? What about the arc of the story? I'm really good at getting, you know, convening a group of people and getting them to work on a project. I think that just comes from my years in the CPA firm.
Well, it's also that you are, I would say you're a born leader.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
You're probably one of those people that if you walk in a room under any other circumstances or just non-theatrical circumstances and there's chaos and confusion, your mind is immediately solving every single problem and getting everybody in line to eliminate that. Am I reading that correctly?
Oh, I'm going to say that a little differently. And that is what I've learned for all the committees I've been on, all the boards I've been on. Nothing is worse than a bad president. Nothing is worse than a bad leader. Mm-hmm. That just drives me insane. So if you got a great leader, I'll be happy to be number 2, 3, 4, or a follower. But boy, if you got a bad leader, I'm going to be the first one to say, here, how can I help out? When's your term up?
Yeah. Right. And one of the things that I'm finding in doing this series of shows is that the leaders are all stepping up. They are.
Oh, fascinating. That's great to hear.
It's one of the themes, and I think that's one of the things about leadership is that it can be developed, it can be instilled, but for the most part, it's inside. And what the leader does is the leader says, you know, we need to pull this together. We need to get things back on track. We need to make the proper adjustments that we need to make, and we need to keep going. It's great. I love it because it's,
and we need to listen to each other.
True. Very true.
You know, and we need to listen to each other. One of the pivotal moments in one of the shows that I created, the idea came from the drummer. We were in the show and we were in the talk back session and, you know, the elephant in the room was there and, you know, someone said, I don't think this really works. And I said, does anybody have a possible solution? And no one said anything at all. And the drummer said, well, you know, I think blah, 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 blah. And we all looked at each other and went, you know, that might work.
That's drummers, percussionists have great ideas. I've often said that they're the heartbeat of the music.
Yeah. The truth is, they sit back in those tech rehearsals and they've done a million shows and, mm-hmm. And how many people ask their opinion?
Exactly. And again, that's another example of good leadership is being open to other people's ideas and opening up the room, because you will get a lot of great ideas. And a good leader also needs to be able to say, maybe not for this show, but another show, although I appreciate you having the idea.
Yes.
So you're not shutting the person down as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of the things
that I always talk about when we're in that talk back session, in the creative session, is it is not helpful for you to say, I didn't like this, this didn't work for me, without having a solution.
Yeah.
How helpful is it to say, I just didn't like that she rode that bike at that point?
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us why. How else could it be handled? What else do you suggest? It just is so unhelpful when people are just so negative about that, about something, without having a potential solution.
Right. I mean, I might say, I don't know why, but that feels wrong. And I personally don't have a solution, but I'm opening it up to, I'm willing to hear solutions for that. And you will, not only is it good for morale, but it also just develops the musical or the piece into such a wonderful, stronger show. And I completely agree with that.
And one last thing about that, and that is, I really say to people, if you're going to say you don't want something, you don't like something, just think of anything that you think in replacement. Because sometimes you say something outrageous and it clicks in somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she doesn't take the motorcycle, she takes a boat. Well, she can't take a boat, but she could float on an iceberg. Something like that.
Sure.
So it's helpful just to, when you say it doesn't work for me and it doesn't do this, but maybe she could blah, 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 blah. It may not be the right solution, but it creates a brainstorming session.
And sometimes it really creates genius solutions.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It opens it up as opposed to shuts it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about Chicago overall. You were mentioning earlier that really not a lot with theater is going on in Chicago.
Live on stage. There's nothing live on stage. There are, we have wonderful Porch Light that is just continuing to do.
I love Porch Light. I do.
Oh, they're continuing to do incredible Zoom and video shows. There's a hand. Goodman has now streamed their Death of a Salesman. Steppenwolf is starting to do stuff. I think Writers Theater is starting to do stuff. They are starting very, very slowly. And a handful of shows are doing plays. I watched a Zoom reading of a brand new musical a couple weeks ago. Very, very slowly things are starting to take off, but absolutely nothing live on the stage. Nothing. And, the sad part is we've had a whole bunch of theaters close. Yeah, just close.
That sucks.
They can't pay their rent. Can't pay their rent during this time. You close your doors.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's same out here. I mean, a lot of the theaters are ensembles, and they out here in New York, they for lack of a better phrase, they theater hop. They rent out the theater that is best for them, and their productions are all over town. But a lot of theaters in Chicago have their own space.
Yes. Many of them do. We are known for storefront theaters. That's where what we are known for, these teeny tiny little theaters. And you see some huge shows in these teeny spaces, and they're so creative, and the staging mm-hmm. is great. The talent is on the stage is spectacular. The lighting design knocks your socks off. That's what we're known for. But, when is that coming back?
Yeah.
Because there's 40 seats in that audience, and I was just talking to somebody the other day, and I said, it is the paying audience that matters. Yeah, you and your friends might want to go, but you aren't paying to see the show. When is that paying audience going to come back to those small little theaters? And I don't know that. I don't know that.
Can you venture a theory as to when you think that will return?
Oh, I think it's going to take a vaccine.
Yeah.
You know, and consider this, the people that are paying for them are age, same thing in New York, 50 to 70.
Right.
You know, those exactly. are the people that, you know, that can pay that. And in Chicago, where prices are cheap, you know, $25 to $45. But still, they're not going to sit in a teeny tiny little storefront with no ventilation, one bathroom, you know, jam packed with people and 10 actors on a stage.
Right. Yeah. And the actors like a foot away from you.
And the actors a foot away from you singing. I saw a production of Bridges of Madison County. It was a spectacular production, but they were 4 feet from me, 2 inches from each other, screaming into their faces. It was so powerful. That couldn't happen to me. It couldn't happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No way. And what's amazing is how quickly we've learned when we see things on TV or when we're watching, you know, a theater platform in one of the shows. It's like that. There's no way. Your mind quickly goes into what we've been conditioned for the last 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
I've heard that in like London is doing, they're advancing a little bit more.
Yeah.
They've had, I remember I was talking about this before, that I read that there was a production of Jesus Christ Superstar in, I think it was Regent's Park Theater that
went up
about like 2 months ago. And it was all like COVID rehearsed, where the director had plexiglass in front of him or in between he and the actor. But it was also in an outdoor theater.
Right.
So do you see anything like that occurring under those circumstances, or do you think we're still concerned?
So that's a great question. It was probably May or June. An artistic director from one of the big companies came to me and said, let's do an outdoor production of Land of Forgotten Toys this November, December. And I said, what are you talking about? Chicago in the wintertime, no one's going to stand outside, blah, 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 blah. And he said, the biggest event in Chicago in the Christmas time is the zoo lights at Lincoln Park Zoo. Hmm. And the truth is, I go there every year. And you freeze your ass off and you look at these lights. And you're outside, you know, maybe 45 minutes to an hour. And he said, I have this great idea how to do this. We make a moving stage. So we spend 10 minutes here, 10 minutes at the next spot, 10 minutes there, outside. I thought, what a great idea. And our show was designed like that. What a great idea. Well, we went to pretty much all the big companies and they all said, no, we're not touching. We're not doing any outdoor theater. We're not doing anything live outside. Actually, the one person that really pushed me to do it was Chris Jones, the theater critic from the Chicago Tribune. He just kept saying, I think this is a great idea. I think you should find a producing partner to do it. And we went to all the big ones and they all said, no, we're just too scared. We're not doing anything outdoor.
Yeah, no dice. I remember reading, I think it was like a month, maybe 2 months ago, that there was somebody tried to put up a show. I think it was about Judy Garland or Liza Minnelli.
Yeah.
And it was all done COVID friendly and the
seats didn't work out so well.
Yeah. And it had to shut down right away because
no one got sick. It just didn't do. So it was not a good thing.
Wow. Now, are you finding that you, are more active in your approval process based upon COVID? I know you talked about that a little bit earlier, but will you, based upon what you understand the school or theater company is going to do with the project, will you put the kibosh on it? Or will you adjust things or make them adjust things?
Oh, no. I mean, once I license it, I stay out of the way.
Okay.
And all my shows are licensed right now. Are licensed to a company. So I say I'm completely out of it. So Mystery Custodia, Land of Forgotten Toys, and my other show, Girlhood, is all being licensed by stage rights. They wanted Mystery of Custodia. They wanted the show that had a whole bunch of licenses, and we brokered the deal. You want one, you got to take them all. And they said, went to look at them. They saw the scripts, all the videos, and said, and music, and they were like, great, these all look wonderful. We'll take them. So I stay out of that. I have nothing to do with how they do it. We give them full streaming rights as part of this. They can do it. That's all part of the contract.
That's probably smart, because once you start getting involved with it, then if anything happens, then it's like, it's, I didn't make any decisions on this. Right. I just
nothing
basically,
to, it's right. That's right.
Right. Right. Right. Granted them the rights for performance, and that's smart. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah.
Now, I think you may have already answered this question, but if you have a bigger answer or another answer, it would be great. But what are some of the positive surprises that have occurred with CPA Theatricals as a result of COVID and its effect on theater? I know you talked about you found a niche and you found a need and it's booming for you. Is there anything else, maybe something personal that you've learned about yourself?
I haven't really thought about that. Let me say that, you know, what has really surprised me is how many people now that you would never think would be open to chatting. You know, here's this Broadway producer. Does he want to do it? Can I just have a quick little conversation with you? Sure. Well, that never would have happened during, if it wasn't COVID, I'm sure. You know, everybody has more free time. Mm-hmm. And I've been really lucky to reach out to people and say, can I just chat with you about this idea that I have? I'm one of these people, I don't have this instant feedback. So many people say, I know immediately if this idea worked, I know immediately. That's not me. I got to sit with it. I got to think about it. I got to talk to people about it. I got to let it rumble in my head before I come to a conclusion, before the idea is fully formed. And I've been very pleasantly surprised how many people have said, yeah, let's chat. Yeah, I'll talk with you about that. Yeah, let me read that and give you some feedback on that.
Wow.
So that's a very positive thing.
It is. I found that there's been a bit of this is kind of a rough phrase for it, but a leveling of the playing field. Everybody has only the same limited options. And even if they were, you know, up here, they have to come down to here, or they have to, that's again, it's, this is very rough. And, but it, we all only have certain things that we can do. And the key word in that is all.
Yeah.
And what I like about what you've done and your success and other people that I've interviewed is you all have taken those boundaries and you've said, what can we do in this very, very limited continuum? And how can we make that the most dynamic we can for everyone? Uh-huh. And I think that's really cool. I really do. That's the one thing I've learned.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, when you're at your most vulnerable, sometimes you can be your most creative.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it's like the lighting designer of a show like The Bridges of Madison County in a teeny tiny theater. You only have so many options, so you got to get really creative. And it's those moments of creativity where the genius really sparks.
Yeah, I agree.
It's you know, again, it's shaking a lot of people up. It's making people think differently. And I think that that's something that they're going to take into when we're out of COVID, and it's opening our minds artistically. And that's the way I try to think about it. You know, when I get a little down,
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's great. We're all trying to pull in this thing, trying to pull together. Mm-hmm. You got to move past that depression. You know, it's not easy to do, but the floodgates will open. Be open and receptive to what the good that's coming toward you.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the good and or the good after. What does CPA theatricals look like after we're all vaccinated and we get out of COVID and we can get back to, quote unquote, you know, normal, regular theater? What does it look like?
Steady as she goes is the answer. We continue to create and develop new musicals. We're not a producing organization. Yes, we have produced shows, but that is not what I want to focus on.
Right.
Steady as she goes. We want to continue producing, creating and developing new plays and musicals based on needs that we have learned about for underserved audiences.
Excellent. Excellent. So there's, I can feel that, you know, learning to be nimble in there too. That's very cool. That's awesome. Before we go, can you go ahead and tell our audiences where they can find CPA Theatricals on social media? If there is one particular site that leads to everything, that's probably the best thing you can mention.
CPATheatricals.org. Mm-hmm. Website takes you through our Facebook page, everything else. You can listen to our music of all of our shows right there. My semi-monthly blog is on there. CPATheatricals.org.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us again, Larry Little of CPA Theatricals. You're a terrific guest. I love talking to you. Last time I saw you, I think it was when we had lunch out here. I think it was last year sometime. We just sat there just gabbing about theater for 2 hours in the hummus restaurant. And it's cool.
Love that place. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, yes. I mean, we've been there a couple more times. And we've gotten delivery from there as well.
Oh, yeah. Gotta keep them going. Gotta keep them going.
Yeah. Trust me, I am. lots of takeout and delivery. I mean, same thing as before, but now I have a good excuse. What else am I going to add to my visa bill? Anyways, it's marvelous to talk to you. You're so smart and you're so creative. And I wish you and CPA Theatricals and all your teams that you put together there, like, so much success and broken legs. I'm thrilled that that you're filling this niche for all these schools. And it's just wonderful to have you on the show.
It is my pleasure to be here. I love chatting with you. I love your show. Big, big congratulations.
Ah, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to my guest, Larry Little of CPA Theatricals. He's so awesome. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket. I am also on Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, and Deezer. In addition, and of course, Your Program Is Your Ticket is on iTunes, and it's now featured on the theater website Thespi. Join their website, you'll love it. Also, big major thank you to the amazing Broadway Podcast Network, who has honored me with a place on their incredible theater podcast platform. Broadway Podcast Network is all about creating an engaging, immersive, user-friendly experience where theater stories of all kinds can be easily found, shared, and enjoyed. Please visit them at my landing page there at bpn.fm/ypiyt. Again, that's bpn.fm/ypiyt, which stands for Your Program Is Your Ticket. Isn't that clever? FYI, I appreciate all good ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. That really helps to elevate my profile. It would be very nice if you could do that. A quick thanks to North Coast NYC, the hip-hop improv theater ensemble that does my intro and outro music. You might be hearing it right now. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer as we transition through and out of this pandemic. watch their content, give them all great ratings and reviews, and most importantly, donate, donate, donate. The fastest way you can help. Thanks everyone for listening, and until our next show, so long theater people, and curtain.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.